The following podcast is brought to you by Newfie EVP, Talking with the Dead in Newfoundland. Jump on Amazon.ca today and get your free sample of the best-selling ebook in Unexplained Mysteries.
It's the odd to Newfoundland. Ghostly greetings from your host, Jonathan. Mysteries, ghosts, monsters, and lore. East Coast Esoterica and so much more. If it's up to you, friend, it's on the up to Newfoundland.
Ghostly greetings from the oldest city in North America. I'm your host, John Mallard, bringing you the best in East Coast esoterica. You, my friends, have stumbled upon the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast for the month of August 2015. Ladies and gentlemen, August is upon us, the new podcast is out, and a little later in the show, I'm going to be joined by Mick Doyle, who's just an awesome paranormal researcher. But before we get into that, I got to tell you a little bit of what's been going on in my neck of the woods with the paranormal, so to speak. First and foremost, we got to talk about the weather. Yeah, I know. Sounds kind of mundane, but Newfoundland has officially had the coldest July on record. Now, of course, this record was broken out at St. John's Airport. Man, it's just been horrible. It's been very, very cold, rainy, drizzle, fog, pouring down buckets. I'm telling you right now, this summer, if you'll call it summer, hasn't been fit, and it's fooling with everyone's emotions. Everyone's on edge, and they're all crazy and stuff. But I'll say this much to you. I'd like to be that little ray of sunshine through the dark old fog. I mean, how can you be sad when you got August to look forward to? I mean, first things first, we got the regatta coming up on Wednesday. Man, oh man, the oldest sporting event in North America. Everyone loves it. My family in particular, because they love to gamble on the races. And there may or may not be a few old Sams being drank on Regatta Day. But Regatta Day is awesome for my family because it's actually my father's birthday. Catch up a little bit with my previous podcast. Just got to throw this out there to you. The name of the two goldfish is Lala and, Emily. Yeah, Lala and Emily are the name of Fate's goldfish. I'm horrible for goldfish. I really am. Okay, let's talk a little tiny bit about what's been going on in my world. Before I jump into the paranormal news, I do want to just touch on a little something. My good friend Shannon Lush, you may know him. He actually is a podcaster. He's all over Twitter. Him and his good friend, of course, Harry Weir, are part of the Route 21 podcast. And now the Route 21 podcast is a podcast that's actually for Mount Pearl, I guess that area, I guess you could say. Hence the name Route 21, which is the name of the bus that runs into it. I'll just give you a synopsis of their podcast. Route 21 is a podcast featuring two lifelong friends discussing news, pop culture, and just about everything that goes on in their lives. Always entertaining and always funny. Step aboard for laughs. Now, I'm not here to promote their podcast, even though I just totally did. I'm actually here to promote Shannon's mom. Yeah, I know, that's a bit strange to say, and I'm really, really proud of myself for not having any mom jokes, so I'm just going to go ahead and dig in and tell you why. Her name is Geraldine Ryan Lush, and she is a paranormal author. Yeah, that's right. She actually wrote a book called Hannigan's Hand, and I'm here to promote that book for her. As a favor to Shannon, of course. And this book actually looks really, really good. You guys might want to check it out. You can catch it. Really, it's everywhere you want to go. I mean, it's on Amazon, and I think it's Barnes & Noble, stuff like that. But I think I'll just read you the synopsis and see if you guys are feeling it at all. Because to me, it's a very paranormal-ish type book. So here it goes. Find out what's lurking inside Hannigan's hand. Many years ago, a young Dan Hannigan witnessed a horrific headless specter and poltergeist activity which shook him to the core. A priest had to intervene to exorcise a demon which invaded his campsite and him. While exorcising the demon from his spirit-possessed hand, the priest told Dan he was being punished by the ghosts of a tragic shipwreck which had happened there a year before. He also told him he was never to repeat what happened at the campsite that terrible night, or the curse would be upon him and anyone else who heard the story. Find out what happened 60 years later in Hannigan's Hand. Available at Barnes & Noble, Amazon, and I'm sure a plethora of other places. There you go, Shannon. Love you, buddy. Good luck to everything with your mother. Good luck to you with your podcast. And keep on keeping on Route 21, baby. Now, with that out of the way, I gotta tell you, I love it when I'm part of the paranormal news, but guess what? I so totally am. So without that, without further ado, we'll say I'm gonna jump right on in and give you guys the paranormal news. Admiralty House Communications Museum. Ladies and gentlemen, I had the absolute pleasure of going and investigating the grounds last month. A few weeks ago, I actually had a chance to release some of my data, some of my findings that I found there, alongside three members who work at the museum, as well as my cameraman, Paranormal, Lynn Short. And needless to say, it was a great, great time. The investigation went out very, very smoothly, and the presentation was great. The room was full of skeptical people, constantly picking me apart every 3 seconds, and I just kept on shooting them down with the data I collected and my knowledge I've gathered over the last few years. I'd like to thank all people who are part of my show for helping me have the, shall we say, armor, spiritual armor on to handle the skeptics. Because to be quite honest with you, I found a lot of skepticism in that room. That being said, I also found a lot of really cool EVPs while researching the area. And I thought it'd be really fun tonight to actually bring you guys a couple of those EVPs. Speaking of EVPs, a little later in the show, I will be joined by Mick Doyle. He's actually a member of East Coast Paranormal Researchers right out of Ireland, and I'm telling you, this guy is awesome. We had a great conversation, so stay tuned for him as well. To bring us back to Admiralty House, of course, this is the start of our working relationship. I'm hoping to actually have at least 5 investigations there over the coming months, so I'm very, very happy for that, and I feel very fortunate. One of the main things I believe that makes me feel fortunate is because, like I said earlier, the summer has sucked for weather. I don't like investigating outside when it's enough to freeze you, and being indoors is awesome. Thank you for trusting me, Admiralty House, John Rich, Carla Watson, and gang, with your millions of dollars worth of replicas, and maybe even a few lost souls. The souls, of course, I'm talking about. One in particular, her name is Lady Anna Pearl. Her ghost supposedly prowls the grounds, but not on foot, on horseback. It's one of the oldest known ghost stories out of Mount Pearl that I'm aware of, anyhow, and it's one I've been fortunate enough to hear quite a few times from my good friend Dale Jarvis. But, you know, I actually got really, really lucky. Now, I would love to play you guys some of the true EVPs, which are just, you know, from recorder, just caught from thin air, basically, that shouldn't be there. But realistically, I haven't got that audio loud enough. You guys are not going to hear it listening to a podcast. So my plan is to let you guys hear some of the spirit box communications. Now, to be fair, I know there are many people out there who don't believe in the spirit box or Frank's box or ghost box or whatever you want to call it. They disregard it basically as radio noise. And I'm telling you, you know what? 99.9% of the examples of EVPs that I've heard from spirit box communications are rubbish. Absolute rubbish. Reason why is because they don't follow any set guidelines. You're getting blips and blaps, and people are, you know, via audio pareidolia, in my opinion, are forming their own opinion about what's coming through that spirit box. But that's why I wrote New Fee EVP, Talking with the Dead in Newfoundland. I wrote that book for a reason, because I do believe the spirit box can work. We just gotta have a little bit more stricter guidelines. I talk a little tiny bit about MADE communications. MADE is an abbreviation standing for multiple word, audible to the ear, intelligently communicated and in direct response to stimuli environment type communications. When these come through a spirit box, they're far more likely to be paranormal, in my opinion. I actually got a couple of examples of MADE communications for you guys to hear tonight. So I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to play the first one. And this first one is pretty straightforward. It's basically saying, this is Anne. Remember that I'm trying to communicate with Anna Pearl. So go figure. Let's have a listen to this and see how you guys feel about it. Now, as you heard that time, I did take it, repeated it quite a few times, slowed it down, turned it up, just so you guys can get a gist of it. I mean, it's pretty quick EVP. Why don't you guys listen to it one more time? This is Anne. Pretty cool, eh? Now, to have that come through was really interesting, because some of the skeptics in the room were kind of like, ooh, wow, that's really, really strange. Even if it is radio noise, let's say that is actually coming from the radio, what's the chances of the name of the spirit I'm looking for coming through on the radio? I mean, you got to think about that for a few seconds, the wonder about all this stuff. Then it gets even better. another one I played during the presentation was Our Home Was Burned. And this came through very shortly after the EVP of This Is Anne. So it came through about 2 minutes later. Another really, really strange EVP. The reason why, of course, is I could not connect it to anything that had happened. So anyways, I'll let you guys have a listen, and I'm going to tell you what happened on site during the reveal. So one more time, I'm going to play that for you guys. Our Home Was Burned. Well, a big shout out to John Rich, who actually approached me after the presentation at Admiralty House when I released all the data and findings. And he came up to me and said, you know, I think I may have some info for you that might interest you. He then took me out of the room that we were presenting in and brought me out into the hall. And there was a small placard against the wall talking about Anna Pearl. And it said her husband had passed away, but then tragedy struck once again when her home was burned to the ground. This, of course, was unknowns to me. I found out on site, and it sent shivers up my spine. Man, oh man, I love Admiralty House. If you guys are into the paranormal, you guys have got to check this place out. They also have some of the really cool old-school relics and radios, stuff like that. So if you're a bit of a tech geek, you'll love this place, too. Make sure you guys check them out online, Admiralty House Communications Museum. I got 5 investigations coming up with these guys, and a whole lot more fun happening around Halloween, so stay tuned. Now that I'm out of the news, it's time to get on with something a little bit more mainstream. You know, talk about ghosts just freaking me out. Well, how about when ghosts photobomb you? Yeah, we all know what a photobomb is, when basically, you know, people are getting their picture taken and you kind of jump in there and go, hey, you know, usually doing something silly, maybe giving people the finger, who knows, right? Well, I'm going to tell you a story about a ghost who photobombed the pub in a photo in Liverpool. An actress and her friends discovered an unexpected extra in a photograph taken during a night out. The picture, which shows Rachel McCowan, far right, and 4 of her friends at the Lisbon Bar in Liverpool, also seemed to show a 6th face in the middle of the group that nobody could recognize. At first I was trying to figure out if it was the light, but it doesn't look like a reflection, and I don't think there was anyone behind when it was taken, she said. I do believe in the afterlife, and I do think people can see spirits. Whether the picture is evidence of the paranormal, however, remains a matter of debate, with critics arguing that something like this could be relatively easy to produce using photo editing software. You know what? Everything can be used and created with photo editing software, all right? It can happen, no problem at all. But I will say this. It's awfully fun to think that just maybe right now there's a ghost trying to photobomb you as you're taking your pictures. That selfie stick, they see it coming out, they're right behind you, man, with their fingers in the air and their tongues hanging out. You know, what separates us, of course, from the animals is the fact that we're sentient, the fact that we have a consciousness, the fact that we are, well, so intelligent that we have self-awareness. Well, guess what? Apparently, we may not be alone. Yeah, that's right. We may be seeing sentient robots. Researchers at the Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute, Allen Reasoning Lab in New York, adapted the classic inductive reasoning puzzle known as the King's Wise Men and posed the problem to a trio of robots. In the puzzle, 3 wise men are given hats of either white or blue, with the guarantee that at least one of the hats is blue. The men are not allowed to speak with each other. The first man to stand up and correctly announce the color of his hat wins. For the robot self-awareness test, Selmer Bignard, chair of the Department of Cognitive Science at the Institute, used 3 of French robotics company Albertin's humanoid Neo robots. He had programmed these with a property algorithm called dynamic cognitive event calculus, which enables the robots to carry out reasoning. The 3 robots were told that 2 of them had been given dumbing pills that rendered them unable to speak, and 1 a placebo. In reality, they had a button pressed on their heads, but the result was the same. They were then asked if they had been given the dumbing pill or the placebo. There are several long moments of silence before one robot stands up and says, I don't know, and then raises its hand like a child in the schoolroom and offers a correction. Sorry, I know now I was able to prove that I was not given the dumbing pill. In order to demonstrate this sort of self-awareness, the robot must be able to understand the rules of the puzzle, recognize its own voice, and recognize that it is an individual distinct from the other 2 robots. So what that means is that this is no longer a hunk of metal with wires and nuts and bolts and screens and lights. This is a being. It's self-aware. This kind of stuff creeps me out. But you know what? I want you to hear live as this robot stands up and becomes sentient. Take a listen. So he turns on all three robots.
Which pill did you receive?
Ask them, what pill did they receive? The robot's standing up right now.
I don't know. Sorry, I know now. I was able to prove that I was not given the dumbing pill.
You know, something so simple and juvenile as that could mark the end of sentient beings as we know them. Because guess what? As far as we know, we are the only truly intelligent animal, one who's capable of complex thoughts like that. When you see a robot do it, you realize, maybe all those movies like, oh, I don't know, Chappie and RoboCop and Terminator, maybe they're a little closer to coming true than we actually know. Well, one good thing about being a sentient robot is you wouldn't have to worry about getting any older. Well, guess what? Maybe there might be a chance for us to be able to halt the old aging process. Scientists may have found a way to halt the aging in humans by discovering a way to do it in worms. Two scientists at Northwestern University in Illinois have identified a genetic switch in a species of transparent roundworm that appears to disable the stress responses designed to protect cells by keeping certain important proteins functioning. The switch is known automatically when the worms reach early adulthood, but by re-enabling it, the worms have the potential to live longer and to stay much healthier throughout their adult lives. The researchers believe that these same mechanisms exist in all animals, including us humans. Wouldn't it be better for society? People could be healthy and productive for a longer period during their lifetime, said senior author Richard Morimoto. I am very interested in keeping the quality control systems optimal as long as we can, and now we have a target. Our findings suggest that there would be and should be a way to turn this genetic switch back on and protect our aging cells by increasing their ability to resist the stress. In the worms, the onset of adulthood and the flipping of the switch begins after just 8 hours, a discovery that casts about on a notion that this is something that occurs gradually over time. All these stress pathways that ensure robustness and tissue function are essential for life, so it was unexpected that a genetic switch is literally thrown 8 hours into adulthood, said Morimoto. So there you have it. Yet another reason why I don't think that we're in the driving seat of our destiny. Literally 8 hours into being an adult and the aging process starts? That's incredible. It's bizarre, and it seems like it's almost intelligently created, wouldn't you agree? Should we be tampering with this stuff? You know, I like to think that my life is going to be very rich and very full. But you know what? 30 years from now, I might have a hard time doing these podcasts. God knows, I might not even be around. So we got to think about those things. Is it worth fiddling with our own genetic makeup to make things better? Is the question really that's on the table here. I think a lot of people would agree changing the aging process could mean a lot of great things for people, especially those who may not live as long. I think of people who may be destined to die when they're 50 and 60, being in the utmost of shape when it happens. At least they'll have a better fighting chance. My opinion on the whole thing? I can't be 20, so I might as well go out the way I'm supposed to go. Where were you guys 10 years ago? Oh, boy. You know, I can't really think of much else that's just more terrifying than giant snails. Well, guess what? I got some horrible news for our friends down south. Florida, I was actually in you a few months ago, and now I'm so glad I left. Because Florida has been invaded by giant African land snails. Authorities in Florida have been attempting to curb the recent influx of the world's largest gastropod. And no, gastropod is not your husband. Passing gas, ladies and gentlemen, gastropod is a snail. With shells measuring up to 18 centimeters in length, this huge species of snail was first discovered in the state 4 years ago when a specimen turned up in Miami. Ever since then, however, their population has been spiraling out of control, and authorities have struggled to keep them in check. As an invasive species, the snails have been creating havoc, not only due to their penchant for eating through numerous types of local plant life, but for the tendency to carry infectious diseases. The fact is, they're a human and an animal health threat, and they're a threat to Florida's agriculture, said State Agriculture Department spokesman Mark Fagan. We can't let the population continue to grow. The snails have also proven particularly resilient to extermination, with organic pesticides failing to work and attempts to use metallohyde pellets thwarted by their tendency to climb up trees. The program has become so bad that local officials have even set up a special snail hotline so that workers can be quickly dispatched to a location when one of the creatures is sighted. In total, more than 158,000 of the snails have been removed over the last 4 years. This is insane. I'm telling you, giant snails like this, it's the size of your hand. It's creepy. It's gross. It's just, you know what? I'm a lover of animals. I am. But you know what? A great big snail like that crawls up my leg or something, dude. I'm grabbing the salt and I am melting that mother. That's all there is to it. Guys, we got the Haunted Admiralty House Museum. Ghosts that photobomb people in pubs. Cute and polite robots that show they're actually very much aware of themselves. We have a genetic switch that if we find a way to flick it, we might live forever, or at least a hell of a lot better while we're around. And of course, we have giant African land snails invading Florida. They're coming to get you, and every one of these stories have been odd to Newfoundland.
The Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal podcast does not accept donations. In lieu of this, the Stella Burry Foundation is a registered charity established in 2005 to secure financial support for the work of Stella's Circle. Learn more and please give generously at stellaburry.ca. And now, back to the show.
And welcome back to the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal podcast. I am joined tonight by a member of the East Coast Paranormal Researchers right out of good old Ireland. Tonight I'm joined by Mick Doyle. Mick, how are you today?
I'm doing fine, thank you. Been busy.
Keeping busy, sir. How busy are you?
Always busy. You know, Ireland is full of mysteries and ghouls and goblins and all sorts, so we're kept pretty busy.
Absolutely. It's not all just leprechauns, right? We got our fair share of haunted castles over there.
We have enough of them, yeah. The haunted castles and Georgian manor homes and Elizabethan homes and all sorts, yeah. So we're kept busy.
You know, one thing I love, Mick, is to hear that people are doing the things I love to do as well all over the world. Tell me a little tiny bit about East Coast Paranormal Researchers and how you guys formed this group.
I formed the group back in September 2010 while I still lived in Dublin. And, you go through various stages. You start off with having spiritualism on your group until you eventually find the right path, you know, where you're going to stick to. So now we're purely, because spiritualism obviously wasn't the path that I wanted to take, we're now purely scientific. And I now live in Northern Ireland and have been going, you know, since 2010. And, you know, we would be one of the busiest teams in the country, I suppose, now. So, and then we have people from Northern Ireland, you know, up here, and from Southern Ireland on the team, and everybody works together. So we're countrywide.
That's great, man. That's great. It's good to hear that you got a nice large reach, do you know what I mean? And one of the things that really struck me that time, even just from you speaking that time, you said that you guys have moved on to more scientific ways of doing things. You want to maybe elaborate a little bit on that for people out there who are into the paranormal and what exactly you meant by that?
Yeah, we're purely equipment orientated. We only rely on what our equipment can pick up. You know yourself, that's personal experiences are only personal. And unless you can prove them through the use of the equipment, they just remain hearsay, I suppose. You know, so we rely on, obviously, on the equipment to pick up what it is that we're experiencing. Say, by way of audio, for example, we have a lot of EVPs that we get in one location that we do in County Antrim here in Northern Ireland called Shane's Castle, where we've been investigating there now 4 years in September coming. And we've a lot, because we're into about well over 800 EVPs just for that one location. So we're, you know, again, we go by just primarily the equipment. our cameras, our infrared cameras, our thermal imaging, and our low-frequency audio is what we go on.
Gotcha. And you know what? It just shows you, you're miles ahead of a lot of other groups out there. Now, me, I'm a lone researcher, so to speak. I do my own thing. I am known to go out with teams every now and then. But for the most part, I do keep to myself. In fact, right now I'm working on proximity. But that's neither here nor there. With you guys, you're saying you're following a scientific method. I mean, that to me is great. You're looking for repeatable data, I guess what you're trying to say, Mick. Having that repeatable data, to me, like that's about as close as this is going to get to science for me anyhow. I kind of feel like the method itself, the scientific method, kind of defeats us every time because it's always looking for predictable, repeatable data. But, I mean, how many EVPs can we haul out of one place before somebody finally says, you know what, electronic voice phenomena or rod of voices are very real? Mick, can you give me a couple of examples of some of the things you caught over maybe one of those places you were talking about earlier?
Well, certainly. I mean, you're on our page, and for example, only over the weekend, just on, we have the sounds of marching from above ground that the group or part of the group actually heard in real time. And it was picked up by one of the recorders. And that's actually been posted on our Facebook page. We've also got the sound of a child who's associated with the location, and you can hear her in the background. We've also, now this is just going back to last weekend, we've also got, again, this is just from Shane's Castle. We also have obviously been told to get out and, you know, something coursing at us, you know. So that's all on audio. From some of our other locations, which you're very welcome to listen to on, again, on our page, you will hear us doing an audio session in the engine room of a World War One battleship called the HMS Caroline. And that's in Belfast Harbour. And you can hear us in the engine room doing an audio session and the responses that we get back, actually in real time that we heard, as well as the equipment picking it up. These are the types of things that we get. Some things we would hear in real time. The majority we don't hear until you get to the analytical stage, until you start, you know, putting it through Adobe or listening to it through WavePad. Majority of cases, no, you only get it, you know, when you come home and you start to analyze. But it's nice that sometimes we do hear them in real time, like last weekend, for example, when the guys could hear them. And then I had a different group that was in another part of the underground tunnels. These are the types of things. Our thermal imaging, we do thermal imaging video and JPEG images. We, Glenn Smith from West Midlands Paranormal Researcher from the UK, he's seen some figures or some shapes walking as they were walking below ground into the tunnels. They looked up and along the parapets they could see these figures moving. And he managed to get a video, thermal video of the figures moving. They're also on the page. Now you can't physically walk above where those parapets are because there's a very high wall and a roof. So wherever it was that he seen and he recorded was actually on the roof. Yeah.
Mick, that's so wild. And, you know, it's interesting, too. You know, we me and you both, I mean, we're out there, we're capturing all these things all the time. It's happening. I don't, for one, believe in a haunted house. I believe in a haunted world where if the stimuli is right in the environment, we're going to have all kinds of crazy things going on. But you got to marvel at the mechanics behind this kind of stuff, you know? How is it possible that these voices are coming from nowhere? What, in your opinion, Mick, are you really dealing with? Do you think you're dealing with the souls of the dead, or do you think it might be a dimensional thing? What's your take on all that?
Well, if you want to go into the possible connection between what are called ghosts and strong magnetic fields, for example, you know, I just have my own take on it, that, like, as an investigator yourself, you go on location, and then you carry out baseline readings with a variety of EMF meters. And the meters that we use, they would measure the magnetic field strength in areas where purported hauntings have been witnessed by people. So the air findings in a lot of cases can be higher than normal. Air readings in a lot of cases can be higher than normal, or they can fluctuate strangely. And there's two ways that you can explain this. Either that ghosts, if you want to call them that, cause changes in the magnetic fields, or those readings are due to normal
and not paranormal causes. Now, an example would be the Earth's magnetic field, the geological formations, for example, and effects from your electronic equipment in the area. You can also bear in mind that electrical fields affect the brain and can be responsible for hallucinations. That could also explain people's sensations of having seen a ghost at areas or sites where electrical fields are highly charged. Again, you know, there are two types of fields that paranormal investigators, they actually should be aware of, which are the geomagnetic fields and the electromagnetic fields. The geomagnetic fields are DC, which are natural, and they're produced naturally by the Earth. And the only meter that we would use to measure them is the natural trophy one. That will only measure your natural EMF. The other fields are the ones that the AC, which you get from electrical pylons, they're the ones that are causing the problems. So higher than normal readings can affect people. And it's giving them this, if you want to call it, misinterpreting, they're interpreting these events or what they're seeing as paranormal, when actually they're not. They're just having hallucinations.
Very interesting. You know, a lot of people will come out pretty much right away and say, I believe in ghosts. And then I always ask them, what do you actually think a ghost is? And then suddenly they go back to their research. There's a lot of ground to cover, so to speak. Mick, tell me a little bit about the reason why you decided to become a paranormal investigator and researcher.
I don't know. I suppose, like, I mean, I was in the military for many years in Ireland, and I would have had some experiences down, obviously in the military. And then, as a child, you would have had that interest, and then as a teenager also. But it was only when I retired in 96 and then I started to take even more of an interest in it. And went to my first, what you want to call it, paranormal convention, actually only in 2009. So I wasn't really doing anything, only my own bits and pieces of research and not going out on investigations, just reading about it. And then joined my first team actually after the convention in 2009. Which was around November time. And I was on that team then for a few months, maybe 5 months or so. And when that team folded. So I decided, how difficult would it be to form your own team, my own team. And, put my own methods into place. And my own theories into place. So that's what I've been doing since. Now, obviously with some slight alterations. Because as you start, the further that you get into it, and the more that you actually start to understand that it's not what people actually think it is. I had this belief, I suppose, and I wasn't sure what a ghost was, if you want to call it a ghost. We don't say, hauntings or ghosts or spirits or anything like that. We know that we're dealing with something that's unknown. And it wouldn't be called the unexplained if that's not what we wouldn't have went into it in the first place. So I think it's more to do with natural unknown energies and something that's able to manipulate us and give us these sensations and give us these, experiences. And now and then, I remember we asked a particular question one night at a location, and we asked, Why are you still here? Or why are you doing this? And the reply was, because I choose to. And that was an intelligent response to a question that we got on audio.
Very intelligent response.
who's to say that it's only the organic body dies? We're electrical beings, and that energy has to go somewhere. What better way than back into the environment again?
I can so much relate to the wonder of it all, because I actually came into paranormal investigation as an atheist, and looking back on it now, there's no way I could say I am. I believe in my heart that what we're dealing with truly is something to do with an intelligent consciousness. We either have to believe in the souls of the dead, or maybe in something extraterrestrial or extradimensional. Either way, it's awesome, and I love the paranormal. Talk about the paranormal a little tiny bit more, Mick. What other subjects in the paranormal interest you besides spiritual, we'll say, hauntings, things like that?
Well, I mean, as a serious researcher, you know, or investigator, if you want to call me that. And we delve into all avenues of the paranormal, other than, yeah, obviously ufology, because we just don't have the time.
Yeah.
So, I suppose I would, you know, we like to put people's minds at ease where, if you want to call it, demonology is concerned and the darker side of things. Mm-hmm. So, and we know that, you know, a lot of people would play on people who would have these fears. So we like to go into, we like to talk to people and allay their fears and say, look, if you want to call it demons and demonics and everything else are like religion, as you said yourself, you come into it as an atheist. I'm actually, I don't practice my religion though, I was raised a Catholic. Like all religions, demonology or Satanism is man-made, as a, made by man as a form of control. So really it's just playing on people's superstitions. And we also, so yes, I would do a lot of research into that side of it as well. And then also the occult, where, you know, where youths and teenagers are concerned. Because we've had some parents contact us and saying that the children were behaving oddly and, you know, they're starting to self-harm, and that, which is another avenue, I know, but it's it does, the occult does play a part in that. And peer pressure as well. So we like to go in and again, as I say, allay people's fears where that's concerned.
Interesting. You know, one thing I love to ask my guests, especially when it gets close to the end of the interview with you guys, always, it's so important for me. What goals do you have for yourself and for your team? I know you mentioned earlier to me when we were off the record that you have a couple of books on the way. Talk about those, Mick.
Well, no, I am in the process of trying to finish a book with a friend of mine, Wayne Ridstall. He's a parapsychologist in the UK. Where we started this book a couple of years ago, and it's from the perspective of the parapsychologist. It's written by a parapsychologist and by a paranormal investigator. So he's giving his take as a parapsychologist, and then I come in and give my take in the same chapter on as the paranormal investigator and researcher.
That's really...
So, yeah, so that's what we're doing. And then I'm also, doing some... Oh, well, I've been asked to write these ghost stories, but I wanted to write them. I wanted to write them around our cases and make them semi-fictional and like semi-fictional and factual. So there's some facts thrown in, but there are slightly embellished facts as well. Some of them would have some truth to them, you know, and. I could, you know, write a story that's based around a, say, a thermal image that we got, our coldest cold spot, minus 40 degrees.
Wow.
That the picture is on our page, and I can send it on to you or bump it up for you.
Absolutely.
And I wrote a story based around that thermal image, and also about the EVPs that are associated with that image as well.
My God, man, minus 40, it sounds more like Newfoundland summer.
it actually did. We got it. We felt the force, actually. It happened in the tunnels of Chains Castle. We could feel it coming, you know. And it was, I suppose, if you want to call it, it was like the darkest of dark that suddenly comes around you when you can't see your hand in front of your face.
Oh, yes.
You can't move. Your torchlight can't penetrate it. Your, you know, even your IR lights and your IR cameras can't see into it. Your thermal imaging just goes completely black, and all you're picking up is a minus 40.
Wow.
And we have that. I can show you the picture. We actually have it. And that's what I wrote is that one particular story on. And I've written a few other stories, and I'm in the hopefully going to try and get it out for Christmas if I can.
Mick, I'll be looking forward to that for Christmas, man. You better send me a little audio clip so I can promote it for you, because Lord only knows here in Newfoundland, we understand you very, very well.
Thank you very much, because you're more Irish than we are, so.
Yeah, I don't know, a little bit of Italian going on up in this place, to be honest with you. Mick, tell me a little tiny bit about maybe a recent investigation you've been on, maybe a couple of the experiences that's going on, and just fill my ear, shall we say, with some recent events in the paranormal field with you.
Last weekend, we were, as I said, we had a team from the UK over, stayed with us for the weekend. A good friend of ours, Glenn Smith from West Midlands Paranormal Researchers in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
He was over with his team, and we investigated the 14th century underground vaults at Shane's Castle in County Antrim. It's also used as a film set for Game of Thrones, if you're familiar with that show.
Oh, I believe there's many a listener out there who knows this show all too well.
Shane's Castle is where Winterfell is based. So people would know Winterfell on Game of Thrones. And we investigate the medieval tunnels that are below the castle. You know, below the castle ruins. So we're actually underground in these medieval tunnels that go back to the 14th century.
Awesome.
We've been there nearly 4 years now. So last weekend we were there for 2 back-to-back investigations. We did last Friday night and we did Saturday night. And everybody was exhausted after we finished and, you know, managed to get some sleep on the Sunday. And it was a very eventful night, a lot of audio. Again, I'm actually in the process and I have of doing the audio or analyzing the audio. And so far we've managed to come up with 17 EVPs.
Wow. That's a lot from one area.
That's from the recorders that we were using. This does not entail what Glenn's team had. This just entails what we had. And it's a location that is constantly producing audio for us. We find that we would rather do a handful of locations that we can keep going back to time after time, that we can build up enough material and a database on each location. Because the more, in my own experience that I'm only talking about, I find that the more that you go to the same location, not only do you get used to it, but it gets used to you.
Mm-hmm.
So the more comfortable you become with it, the more comfortable the location becomes with you.
I can totally relate to that one 100%. In fact, a place where I've done 19 investigations in total is Cape Spear, Newfoundland. This is an old military barracks. There's all kinds of wonderful things going on there. We've got cell doors closing with no cell doors. We've got footsteps in the hall. And good Lord, if you use any kind of instrumental transcommunication device, they always seem to light up like crazy. So I can totally relate 100%. Mick, I could sit back and trade old war stories with you to the paranormal field, but unfortunately we have come to the end. Where can people find you online?
Yeah, well, we just have our Facebook page. It's Mick Doyle, East Coast Paranormal Researchers, and we're based in Northern Ireland.
Oh, yeah. We'll keep our eyes open for that book, too, by the way.
Well, as I said, I'm doing my best. And in between that, we're doing, you know, the investigations take up a lot of our time. So, and we've just taken on 2 new people to train up as well. So it's, you know, we're back out again in a couple of weeks' time also. It's a busy time for us. Plus, like, you know, yourself, for us, it's just... it's a hobby that we enjoy doing.
Absolutely.
And everything we do is free of charge for everybody.
Oh, I love to hear that. Me too. I've never charged. In fact, I just recently did an event myself. I would never, ever charge for an investigation. Not until I can capture one like they do on Ghostbusters. Mick, listen, you've been a great guest, man. I know my listeners out there are going to really appreciate to hear from someone from Dublin, or actually from Ireland. That's going to be really interesting. Yeah. And you listen, promise me one thing, though. If I ever do jump on a plane... and I decide to bring my recorders with me, maybe even my sonic gun, do you think I might be able to hang out with you guys in those castles someday?
You'll be here as our guest.
All right. Yeah, throw Johnny downstairs by himself.
you'll be here. Oh, I can put you in, take you out of your comfort zone, yeah.
So. All right, Mick, I do bid you adieu. Thanks so much for being a guest on the Odd the Newfoundland.
Okay, John. Thanks again. Take care.
Awesome.
Okay, bye. Bye-bye.
Well, the time to say goodbye is upon us. But don't worry, you can keep track of the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast very easily. It's available on Stitcher, iTunes, Podbean, and TuneIn Radio. Just look for the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast banner. Of course, if you'd like to keep up to date, you can always check out the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast Facebook page. Drop a like, and every single time a new show goes up, you'll be notified. You can also follow me, John Mallard, on Twitter, at ODDTONFLD. That's Odd to Newfoundland. Get your latest news on the podcast as well as the ever popular para joke of the day. From the oldest city in North America, I bid you adieu from the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast.